We're not going to fight anymore.
I'm also just a girl.
Time to float.
Standing in front of a boy.
Such a great audience.
Come on, y'all talkers up in here. Time to keep it down right now.
Avengers!
Hello and welcome back to When Cinephiles Attack, a weekly podcast where four movie fans test the limits of their friendship. I'm Rashawn and I'm here with
Mella,
Josh,
and Lacey.
Thank you all so much for pressing play. Thank you for being here with us. That always warms our hearts and makes us feel...
Real quick, Rashawn?
Yes, sir.
Now that we're in the home stretch of episodes and I'm not allowed to host any in the last few... For me, can you make the intros like super chaotic? Since, can you say something crazy right now?
You think Rashawn's gonna make something chaotic?
Who said you're not allowed to host?
The spreadsheet.
I think this counts as chaos. I'll keep it in. How are you guys doing?
Good. Can we talk about it now?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Dune 2 came out!
I see possible futures all at once. And in so many futures, our enemies prevail. But I do see a way. There is a narrow way through. You believe me?
This is a form of power that our world has not yet seen. The ultimate power.
Yes, it is.
This one, I'll keep.
He has not stopped saying that.
Like, Lacey and I went to play basketball this morning. Anytime I made a shot.
What are you saying?
Lisan Al-Ghib. The Lisan Al-Ghib, that's what... what's his name? The actor?
Javier Bardem?
Yeah, that's what Javier calls Timothée Chalamet.
The Messiah.
The Messiah, yeah. The chosen one. So anytime I do something cool, I call myself Lisan Al-Ghib.
I'm surprised that's not your chat name in here. Fuck. What a missed op.
Can we restart the room?
No.
Really? I've already seen it twice. I saw it twice, like, within the opening weekend. Don't make that face, Mel. I loved it. I loved every second. I don't have a single critique. What'd you guys think?
I saw it, and a lot of people were like, oh, you saw it for the pod? And I was like, no, bitches, I actually just saw it. Damn, can a girl just see a movie? But I get the surprise.
It's the sand.
It's the length. I fucking actually really liked it. I liked it a lot better than the first one. I think the first one is just, obviously, it has to get you into the film, right? It has a lot of storytelling. It has a lot of, like, what's it called? Like, setting it up for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm not good with that. So, that was a little rough. And then, plus, this one had, you know, more people that I wanted to see, you know? Zendaya got her whole spiel. We saw Austin Butler, like,
she was Josh in more Brolin than 5 minutes good. Of the movie.
Right. Yeah, I dug it. I thought there was, like, I mean, I guess someone else, you would say the whole movie is masterpiece. I thought there were, like, absolute shots that I was like, whoa, fuck, that is, that it just, like, blew me away.
There's a couple of scenes that, like, I tell people, like, sometimes you hear, you gotta see this in the movie theater. And, like, yeah, you should watch as many movies in the movie theater as you're able to. But there's one or two scenes in this movie that have to do with certain large creatures. See it in a movie theater.
Like, there's no way I could have seen this at home.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Like, at all. And I think that's just, you're doing yourself a disservice if you see it at home.
Yeah. Lacey?
I really enjoyed it. It does not feel like a 3-hour movie. It moves at a really steady clip, I think. I also loved the different cinematic choices that they made. The whole arena scene that's done in inverse and black and white is just like, it's stunning. It's stunning to watch on screen. I had this issue with the first Dune. I have it with this Dune. Timothy is just so small, you guys.
That's the point. He's Muad'Dib. He's a desert mouse.
He's so small, and it's just very hard to believe.
He's Muad'Dib. What do you mean?
And I get that, and I love
he's
that.
He's the son of Ogeep.
Okay. His name's also Paul, and I think that's dumb.
Enough. Enough with that.
We did have this discussion.
Enough with the Paul.
I feel the same. I was really happy that they were like, yo, Paul sucks dick. Let's give him a new name. Give him a nickname. I'm like, okay. Everyone agrees.
Yeah, but for me, Javier Bardem stole the movie. I thought he and Rebecca Ferguson both were like on two opposite ends of the spectrum character-wise, obviously. But anytime either of them were on screen, I just couldn't look away. They were both so, so good.
To watch Stilgar go from this like mentor figure to slowly morph into religious fanatic in real time was
fucking...
All right, my fellow Dune head, Rashawn, what'd you think of it?
I read the book.
I liked it a lot. I didn't love it, but I do think it was kind of like Oppenheimer last year. I thought it was like a masterfully made movie that I didn't necessarily emotionally connect to. And they've both been kind of compared, Nolan and Villeneuve, because I think they are spectacle guys above all else. I like the changes that he made from the book, so I'm not here to say that. But I do think what this movie needed was a really good romance, and I don't think the romance, which the third act kind of hinges on, was developed enough. But I did say in my letterbox, this is like one of the best third acts that I've seen in a very long time. Like, it's really, really good.
Once it kicks off, it's 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, but the change of Shani leaving at the very end of the film needs to really hit. Because in the book, she understands, she chooses to be his concubine, and it's like a, kind of an icky feeling. But I think if the romance was the central part of the movie, maybe that triangle at the end that they're setting up would have a lot more impact.
Yeah, Denny said in interviews that he is worried that some people might get the wrong idea and think Paul is like the hero. And so they made a couple changes, and... people still think that
he's a hero.
I
think if they, like what Rashawn said, would have laid into it a little bit more, that scene where he's like,
before this tale bloody revenge reaches its climax, I have a few unanswered questions. It's our little secret.
My girlfriend already seen the movie. She said they don't need to stay together in the end.
Okay, spoiler if you are listening. If he's you know, he tells Florence Pugh, like, yo, like, you're going to be my queen if you let me do this. And then he looks at Zendaya. Like, that scene right there, like, you're kind of like, damn. But it doesn't feel as heavy because just a couple scenes ago, he's like, I'm going to love you until I die. So, like, the weight of it doesn't really hold as much because I left and I was like, I mean, still the hero. He still got shit done right there.
No, he's not a hero. Well, he's about to start a genocide.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen in this movie.
He's a hero for this one.
But that whole scene where he announces to the Fremen that he is their leader is pretty evil. I didn't think any of that was subtle in the movie at all. And even Lady Jessica completely co-ops an entire religion, and I didn't think any of that was vague at all. That Paul and Jessica are pretty bad people, or become bad people.
Did you like the idea of Aaliyah, of Paul's sister, sort of being sentient and speaking with Lady Jessica from the womb?
Well, I understood it for the movie, but I hated it. It was icky. I didn't like it.
Originally, she's a little toddler running around.
Yeah, maybe I would have liked that more.
I like this change.
I don't know.
A Renesmee situation.
Was she like supposed to be like full on talking to her mom as a toddler?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know. It was, at first it kind of threw me off because I feel like, yes, this is all like a fantasy. We got sandworms and shit, but it still feels like pretty grounded. And then that baby stuff was happening and I was like, wait.
I genuinely thought for a little bit that she was maybe going crazy.
Yeah, same. Where I was like,
I didn't think the baby was actually talking to her.
Same. I thought that blue juice got her fucked up.
Yeah.
The water of life. Dude, I've seen so many. Like, I saw, you know, I've seen one with Baja Blast. I saw one with the old, the Kool-Aid squeezers, the blue flavor. Water of life.
It's worm piss.
I would have wanted to see if they're going to do like the run around talking murderous toddler. But keep it as Anya Taylor-Joy, so like morph it, like old Mike Myers movie.
Absolutely not.
Like her head, her full size head on a little body running around.
Ew. Her big ass eyes just stretch across. Stop. The body. No.
Okay. I just wanted to talk about Dune 2. Thanks, Rochelle.
No problem. Has anyone watched anything? We finished Traitors. Everybody finished.
Yeah. We all finished Traitors. Skip ahead, I don't know, 30 seconds if you haven't finished Traitors, the reality show. Challenge gang, competitors compete. What's up? Take that Bravo click.
I like CC.
Trishelle is so dumb in the end.
I can never root for her from episode one when she voted out Peppermint.
Yeah. Did you see the reunion?
No, I haven't watched it yet. I don't know. Is it messy? Or do they address that?
It's like they address messy. That. They address the Peppermint and...
They don't have Trishelle, like... They don't address Trishelle at all in that.
No, they just... Like, cameras, like, cut to her, but she's just sitting there, like, smiling. So...
Peppermint really... is very generous.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she was in the beginning... She was the whole time.
They need to bring her back. You know who they need to bring back for season 3? Peppermint? And Lacey?
No.
Say it, Lacey. Say it, Lacey.
The horrible fruit... It's a horrible flavor, and it's a horrible contestant.
Johnny Bananas. He's not a horrible contestant. He's my favorite reality personality ever.
I thought you liked him, Rashawn.
I love
him. He's obnoxious. I like him, but...
And here's,
I like him on the challenge. Like, he should stay on the challenge.
Here's my thing, too. Not for nothing. This is why I really liked when they had some, like, civilians sprinkled in and not just reality personalities. Is especially when you get into, like... multi-time winners like Sandra and Housewives who have a lot of money, there's a little less urgency during the challenges. give me people that are paying their rent month to month. Make them swim out into a lock and collect $10,000. That's the shit I want to see.
Okay, this woman won Survivor twice. Like, she's sitting pretty.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see the social worker, like, jump over stuff and like win the bag.
Yeah, that's why like I wasn't even salty in the end about MJ getting voted out, because it's like, you're a housewife, you don't need between the three of you, you would have gotten like $60,000. Like, that's chump change to you. You don't need that.
She also could have prevented that like 3 times.
Oh my gosh, she was so every time it cut to her, she was like, I'm positive that so-and-so is a traitor. And it was never the right person, ever.
Yeah. Her voting out Sandra was like her death sentence.
Yeah. So. When they were walking to the final moment, and Andrew's like, the only person I trust right now is Kate. It's like,
well, mama, you sealed your fate. What were you going to say, Rashawn?
Long may she reign. Not Ekasu, Lord. Not Ekasu. I love me some Phaedra, man.
My burgie.
Not my burgalicious. I do too much because you do too little. Yago. And I love Dan, but this was not the game for him.
No.
He thought he was playing big and so well. Like,
oh, sir. The worst player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Dan, who do you think the traitor is?
I'm
still gathering evidence. I don't want to say until I know. All right, dog.
You're the fucking traitor. And I feel like he was in there for a while. I'm like, y'all, he is a traitor. How is no one catching on to this?
And it works. His gameplay works so well in Big Brother because there's only two people that can go home every week. So you can lay low and you can keep your cards close to your chest. But anybody's up for grabs every week, bro.
Give Alan Cumming an Emmy. That's it.
For those outfits.
For best. Yeah, too.
Best host.
Best host, yeah. He's so much fun.
RuPaul has a lock on that category. Okay. Shall we jump in?
Today's quite an endeavor.
Today's a big one. As we bring the show to an end, this is one of the most important aspects of the show, and I wanted to make sure, like I said last week, that we honor that and we make sure that every voice that reached out to us and engaged with us was heard. So, in the interest of time, I know it won't be 7 full episodes, so I do apologize about that, but I do want to make sure that you all were acknowledged. And over the course of these 4 years, we've had a lot of people reach out to us, and these are the episodes, these are the listener choices that we could not fully get to. But we're going to get to them today. So this is a listener's request mega episode. We have a list of films that have been requested to us, and we're just gonna chug through them. We've done some heavy watching. We've survived most of them.
Barely. Some of
them maybe not so much. but like we did last fall, we're gonna put them in categories. And each time we bring up a movie and the listener that requested it, before we start discussing, we can just, each of us can just give a thumbs up, thumbs down, haven't watched, or let me explain. And then we'll do a little mini episode and move on to the next one. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. The first movie comes from a very incredible listener who was extremely generous to us on Buy Me a Coffee by the name of Jack is Back. First of all, thank you so incredibly much for any, if you gave us a penny, it would be enough. But the fact that anybody opened their wallet over the past 4 years, you do not know how much it means to me. I'm going to say personally, sorry, you guys, but it means a lot. 4 years is a long time to uphold a podcast, and no words. So thank you. Jack said, keep up the great work, y'all. One movie I'd love to hear your thoughts on is Francis Ha. Seems right up your alley. So, first movie on the docket is the 2012 comedy Francis Ha.
One moment. It's what I want in a relationship, which might explain why I'm single now. Ha ha. It's kind of hard to. It's that thing when you're with someone and you love them and they know it and they love you and you know it. But it's a party, and you're both talking to other people, and you're laughing and shining, and you look across the room and catch each other's eyes, but not because you're possessive or it's precisely sexual.
This was directed by Noah Baumbach. It was co-written by Baumbach and Greta Gerwig, and I want to say kind of officially introduced the world to the talent that is Greta Gerwig. Baumbach was already pretty well known, and then this kind of exploded her onto the scene, and during the height of the mumblecore phase.
Sorry, that's crazy.
What?
Mumblecore?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Duplass brothers, Noah Baumbach.
I mean, I totally agree. I've never heard that before.
Really?
Yeah, that... I totally see what you mean, and it totally makes sense. But that's so good. That's crazy. Sounds,
the fact that it's like a coined term, but it also sounds like a bit of an insult.
It does, yeah. But it's just like you know, improvised dialogue, kind of really natural acting, low budget, more so like dialogue than
not a Rashani like feature.
What?
I don't think so.
Damn.
Oh.
No, wait. I'm talking about your style of writing.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like,
almost like, what?
I like these movies.
No. Sorry, I meant just like, I don't think you write like that. Like, you're very put together, I guess.
I don't know where this drag is coming from.
Why is that a drag?
Spray and pray, dude.
Francis Ha is about a young dancer in New York City at a crossroads in her life as everyone and everything around her changes. I guess, as I just got mad at her for saying this, but I like this movie. I'm going to say thumbs up. Short. Thumbs up. Who's next?
It's not a let me explain?
I feel like it's a let me explain.
All right, since y'all speak for me. let me explain.
It's a thumbs up for me. I will say this, I think a movie like this benefited me because this is one I watched at work. So I watched it in like 25 minute segments. Like I don't know, that some movies that really harms the viewing experience. And I think I've noticed because I've had to do that a lot over the years. Some of them actually I think helps. And I think this is one of them that helps, maybe because it's mumblecore and I don't have to expend all my energy, like kind of really focusing and listening. I think this is the exact kind of role Greta Gerwig is great at. I've seen some things where it doesn't quite land as well, but I think she herself has this sort of energy and sort of kind of offshoot crackling sort of way of speaking that obviously, I mean, was this written for her exactly? I don't know much about the backstory of Frances Huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, I assumed because it's not...
There's tea on the backstory, but that's okay. We don't have to talk about it on mic.
He said there's tea.
But it sounds like it was written for her, by her, whatever. So, I mean, I think it works great for her. And I enjoyed it. It's nice and, what, like an hour 20? So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I had seen this movie, I say it in my letterbox, I saw this movie at the same age that Frances is in the movie. And I feel like I couldn't handle it. I was like, oh, this movie fucking sucks. No one's saying anything. She's so fucking annoying. And then now, at 33, going on 34, I'm like, oh, well, it's because I was fucking annoying at that time. Like, that's what it was. And I just feel like taking all those, you know, like a 10-year difference obviously is going to be a lot with anything. But watching it and realizing, like, holy shit, that's just, like, how you are at, I think she's, what, 24, 25, 27, yeah. In your 20s, trying to figure out life, it's just interesting to watch with some time in between. And I feel like I liked it, you know, way better than I did before. I think it's just a really beautiful piece about friendship. I think oftentimes, you know, you get stories on romance that are just like romantic, obviously, and not platonic. And I feel like this is just a true story, a true look at best friendship, and you don't really get a lot of stories like that, and I dug it. Took me a minute, but I dug it.
I didn't see this movie until this year. I put it on before it was even requested. I've been doing that lately with people I respect in the industry, is like going back and watching all of their filmography and like watching their style change and grow. In watching Frances Ha, it was so interesting to see a different perspective on the coming of age story from Greta Gerwig, because we have Lady Bird, we have Little Women, even in Barbie, it's a little, it's cool to see the evolution of coming of age for women through her eyes. And Frances Ha gave a different perspective. It kind of bridged the gap between Lady Bird and Barbie, in that awkward, horrible, wonderful age that is your 20s. I really felt for Frances. I hated Frances. I loved her. And yeah, I think, Mel, I think it's like you said, it paints a really great picture about female friendships, especially. Who doesn't have a best friend that they were attached at the hip to, you know, in high school, college, that you go through periods where you your priorities change or your goals change. And if you're lucky enough to have a platonic soulmate in friendship, your paths will eventually come back together. And I think we see that ebb and flow in Sophie and Francis's relationship. I'm a sucker for a modern day black and white movie. I love that style. I don't know, it makes me focus more, I think, on the actual story. And Adam Driver. He's so great in this.
Rashawn?
Yeah. I don't know why I said let me explain. I do like this movie a lot. In the inverse of Mel, I liked it more the first time I saw it than when I just recently watched it. And I think what I've come to know that I love about Greta Gerwig is how she can devastate you with a couple of exchanges and dialogue. Lady Bird just is a peak example of that, but she's still doing it in Barbie. Like, she's just great like that. One of the lines is, what do you do? I can't really explain it. Why is it difficult? No, I'm just not doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At the party.
Mm-hmm. She gets to the where Villeneuve is like, maybe doesn't really handle people. This is all she does. And I respond really well to that. I lived in Washington Heights for a couple of years. Like, I get the feeling of this, and it works really well. So I really do enjoy it. I just, maybe not a huge fan of Greta as an actress, but
I agree.
That's like a small nitpick for the movie, which I still really like, especially up against Adam Driver, Mickey Sumner, who plays Sophie, I think are all really great. And
I think it's the classic case of like a really good writer acting. But I think for this, it's written for Greta Gerwig. So we're just like, okay, like she's playing herself, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When she gets a surrogate, like Saoirse.
Right. You know, mm-hmm. It works.
It sings. Yeah. Good stuff.
All right. Hey, one down. Four for four. Nice. With a little asterisk, but four.
Changing it. The next request comes from someone who also had us thinking and scratching our heads last year with The City of Lost Children. This time they gave us a movie called Songs from the Second Floor. Jordan, thank you. This is a 2000 Swedish drama, comedy, mix of tragedy, written and directed by Roy Anderson. It's part of a trilogy that includes You, the Living, and A Pigeon Sat on a Bench, Reflecting on Existence. This is about a world at a moment of crisis and reflection and the possible end of humanity. And I'm giving it a thumbs up.
I have not seen.
Yeah, this is a one of maybe two Rashawn specials, because me neither.
Jordan, you had me with The City of Lost Children. I really enjoyed that. I believe my letterboxed review for this was, there's a bleak, and then there's this, about Songs from the Second Floor. I did not find it funny. you saying that there's comedy, Rashawn, I did not. It's a thumbs down.
Cut to the chase.
It's a thumbs down.
That was quite funny. I said in my letterboxed that this would pair very well with The Zone of Interest. That is not a funny movie.
What are you talking about, Rashawn?
Because they both deal in these vignettes that just plant the camera in a very static shot, and they just watch people exist. In The Zone of Interest, it's incredibly grounded and almost to the point of satire, how bleak and devastating it is, because the sound design, which rightfully won an Oscar, has the horrors of the real world going on next door. I think with The City of Lost Children, Songs from the Second Floor, the camera is also planted and static, and we're just watching these kind of short vignettes happen, and they're absurd in how sad and bleak they are. But I think the tension of the movie comes from how people are reacting to these things that are happening. You know, you watch like Independence Day or Don't Look Up, which just happened, and the end of the world would have you think that people are just like running and screaming and like crying all day. And I feel like by the end of this movie, everyone's just like numb, walking zombies. And that seems like it's a really bold choice. And I know that it's not the most entertaining to watch, but it works as an experiment, like The Zone of Interest. And it leaves you with a lot to chew on and a lot to digest. But I really enjoy it, because it's just a bold choice.
It's a good sell. Probably won't ever catch me watching it, but that is a good sell. That's a good pitch.
Yeah, I like the way you described it.
I know, I'm like, damn, I kind of want to see.
No, hold on.
Mella and Josh, you would not.
Yeah, you would not. I was like, it's not going to work for you.
No. There's a moment where this gentleman, it's never quite sure if he committed arson. He committed arson and burnt down his shop. And the insurance adjusters are kind of delivering him bad news. But he gets on a train and he's kind of sitting with his thoughts, and the people on the train start singing. Mm-hmm. And it is, I don't know, it's one of those moments where I'm like, this is what you can do in a film if you have a limitless imagination. Like it felt like such a movie moment in a film that is not a capital M movie. I loved it. I got chills during that moment. Lacey hated it. I thought it was so good.
I wasn't connected to him yet. The first 10 minutes of the movie are so jarring.
Because it's the guy in the tanning bed.
It was the guy in the tanning bed?
No, I'm the opening of the movie.
Oh, yes. It's just, I don't know. And I understand from the perspective of like seeing a bunch of, you know, how the end of the world is impacting a bunch of different people and their own side storylines. But like, I didn't like it. And to be fair, I was not in a good headspace yesterday. So maybe that impacted my viewing experience. But no.
Interesting.
Cool. Jordan, you got one per request. You got one thumbs up.
Same with City of Lost Children.
That's what I mean. One, he got one then, one now. We love you. Our next request comes from a lovely person named Ryan Berry, who wanted us to talk about the 2002 movie Signs. Two
metric shapes the size of a football field.
What kind of machine can bend a stalk of corn over without breaking it?
Can't be by hand. It's too perfect.
So the aliens can't read our minds.
Oh.
Some animals around the county have been acting funny. Some of them violent. It's almost like they act when they smell a predator around.
Amman, Nairobi, Bangalore, and Jerusalem as the latest.
Same shows on every station.
Every station?
It is the 18th reported crop sign in that country in the last 72 hours.
I'm a little scared. All this stuff on TV. Joe Gills was in here talking about the end of the world.
Written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, this is a movie about a former priest and his family who discover a series of crop circles in their cornfield as extraterrestrials begin to make their presence known. I'm a thumbs up.
A thumbs up.
Let me explain.
Oh. I'm a thumbs up.
If you'd asked me before I rewatched it for this, thumbs up without thinking. One, if you know me, if you've been listening for a month, you know you can assume what my thoughts on Mel Gibson are, and whatever you're assuming, you're absolutely right. Fuck him. So that's shelved. That's not part of my critique. I'm trying not to look at this through the lens of it being a product of its time, but that's hard to do. But specifically the ending, the very end with the baseball bat and the glasses of water and all that, I would love to see that done not only with today's effects, but with Shyamalan that we have today, the Knock at the Cabin Shyamalan. It was just a little cheesy for me. I love the concept. On paper, plot, A to A, B, C, D, start to finish, could remain the same. I'd love to see it be done in 2020s Shyamalan as opposed to the aughts. So it's not a thumbs down. It is not a thumbs down. It's closer to a thumbs up than a thumbs down. But I cringed a little watching it, specifically the end. Sorry, whatever. I just saw Dune 2. Sorry, it's a lot to live up to. Sorry.
Oh, please. I would argue that I just watched it last night. That
it's heavy.
Yeah, I don't know why I said that, but it's
fucking 2 a.m.
I don't think that they are different Shyamalans. Knock the Cabin's pretty cheesy and earnest in a great way, but I think he's still that really cheesy filmmaker.
Yeah,
between
old.
Between that and old, I think he's still.
I never saw
still that guy.
So cheesy was maybe the wrong word. You know what it was that kind of bothered me? Especially, it's the final scene, really, that changed me from a thumbs up to a let me explain. I didn't like the editing in it. It was the opposite of kinetic. like to me, it was very stagnant. It was like shot, and then the next shot was like Joaquin, okay, now I'm picking the bat up. And then the next shot was the alien. And then the next shot was the little girl not screaming. Scream. Instead of like, I would have, what are they called? K&L cuts or something? I would have trimmed the front and back of each shot a little bit at the end to make it a little more frantic. It was just not as frantic as I wanted it to be. It didn't, the tension wasn't there. It didn't seem very stressful. It was very much like, shot. Next shot. Next shot.
He's not Villeneuve, he's Spielberg. You know, he goes for the Amblin School of Filmmaking.
He should try going to the Villeneuve School of Filmmaking. He should try the Affleck School of Filmmaking.
Oh my God, Josh.
This is, so when I watched Scream, I watched it after Scary Movie. And when I watched Signs, I also watched it after.
Why are you doing that?
I don't know why. That's just how it happened. Because, you know, if you've been listening, you know that I wasn't like always in my horror bag until I met Rashawn and I was like forced to watch it. And now I like them. that's just what it is. And I was like ready to just not get into Signs because, you know, Scary Movie 3 is like the whole plot is Signs. And I was like super pleasantly surprised. I think there's something about this movie that is like eerie, but not totally scary that I love. And I think, Josh, like those shots, while I do agree, I would love to see it, you know, now and like with all the like cool effects that we have. But those like kind of slow, choppy shots kind of play into that versus like the quick cuts of classic horror movies that we have. But yeah, I dig it. I think there's something about M. Night that, you know, there's not the twist is not always as huge as we think it is. Mm-hmm. There's something like simple about that it's just like, oh well, yeah, okay, it's the water cups. Like it, I like that. So
yeah, like it. I remember growing up, this used to be the butt of a lot of jokes because the aliens were. They were water was poisonous to them, and it's like that's not insane to that's not an insane plot point. It's an interesting twist that these aliens invaded a planet.
We don't know shit.
Yeah,
could be true.
Please,
I think M. Night, especially early M. Night Shyamalan, does tension like nobody else. This whole movie is a build up to the first time we see the alien walking. And I remember watching it at whatever, 9, 10, 11 years old, and I had nightmares for weeks about these fucking creatures.
Did you sleep with foil on your head?
No, my mom wouldn't let me.
She slept in the bathtub with a thin layer of water.
Woke up pruny every day, but I was safe.
Raisin girl.
But watching it again this time, it's something that Knock at the Cabin and Old missed for me that I'm like really longing for. M. Night is not afraid of taking his time, which I love. But there is an element of tension in The Sixth Sense, even in The Village. His newer work doesn't quite have for me. And I think Signs, it's masterfully done. And I think despite who the actors are, I think the family relationship is really well done in this movie. Baby Abigail is the cutest, saddest, scariest little thing I've ever seen. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a classic. I think it's if you haven't seen it, where have you been? But I think it's essential viewing for a horror fan and for sci-fi fans.
Mm-hmm. Also pairs really nicely with Nope.
Yep.
Yeah.
I also love that he's one of the few filmmakers working that isn't afraid to lean into faith and the subject of faith. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't, if he is a person of faith, it's evident, but he also doesn't ridicule anyone on either side of that debate or that line. I think Scorsese is a master, but he also does this as well, where he doesn't let his personal beliefs overtake the movie, but it's very clear that he believes in something higher than himself. And I love when filmmakers let that inform their filmmaking and not necessarily need to either preach a message or ridicule someone who believes.
I guess I never thought of it like that, but even after, because I never saw Old, I don't know if there's symbols in that that align with faith, but Knock at the Cabin has a lot of it. And gun to my head, if you asked me if he was an atheist, Catholic, whatever, I have no idea. And I think that's great.
And that's something that he completely infused that, because the book has none of that. But you can tell that he has, it's very important to him. Mm. But you never walk away feeling, whether you're an atheist or a believer, you never walk away feeling like someone's just, you know, bopped you on the head or made fun of you.
There's theming, and he also keeps it to the characters. If a character has a very strong faith too, it never bleeds out into the whole movie. It's obviously themes are one thing, but yeah.
And yeah, it's a movie about aliens, but it's also a movie about a man rediscovering his faith and like taking back like leadership of his family. I
really love it. Shouts out to M. Night, dude. And shouts out to Ishana. Everyone go see The Watchers.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
It doesn't give too much away, but I need to sit all these trailer makers down. Talk to them.
Yeah.
You had a chance to fix it from the inside out, Rishon.
They was running me ragged. Who's next? Okay. This is a classic. Lunch Money Mo. You asked us to talk about a childhood fave, a little bit of nostalgia. 1996's Matilda.
Yeah. Daddy, you're a crook.
What?
This is illegal.
Yeah, keep drilling. Do you make money? Do you have a job?
No, but don't people need good cars? Can't you sell good cars, Dad?
Listen, you little wiseacre. I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're little. I'm right, you're wrong. And there's nothing you can do about it.
This is written by Nicholas Kazan, directed by Danny DeVito. It's a fantasy comedy coming-of-age movie about a young girl, a prodigy, who develops psychokinetic abilities, and she uses them to deal with her family and the principal of her school. Thumbs up.
Well, if I said thumbs down.
Can you imagine?
Thumbs up. The fuck?
Thumbs up, dude. Of course.
Two thumbs way up, baby.
Take the floor.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lacey, you want to take point on this one?
I have talked about Matilda ad nauseum on this podcast. This movie was like my sick day movie, like when I was home. This is the movie I would put on. If it's rainy outside, put on Matilda. If it's spring and sunny like it is right now, put on Matilda. It has this Technicolor warmth to it. It's vibrant. It's the angles that Danny DeVito uses to accentuate the disparities between adults and children is so well done, especially with her parents and the trench bowl. It's expertly performed. The design of it all is amazing. The lore behind it, and you know what a home Danny DeVito made that set for all of the kids, and how safe he made it feel for all of the kids. It's just it's a warm, it's a blanket right out of the dryer. Like it's so warm and cozy and wholesome, and it just makes me feel good. And I love it. I love the story of Matilda because it is warm and cozy in contrast to the really darker elements that the characters are dealing with. They're dealing with abuse. They're dealing with neglect. They're dealing with ad nauseum. Apparently that's my word for this episode. But what Roald Dahl did is he used magic to combat those dark elements. Danny DeVito uses the magic and then the color and the practical effects to then create more magic of his own with this movie. I think it's perfect. Top to bottom, perfect.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to add to that. I mean, it's Matilda is Matilda is Matilda. Yeah, I think Mara Wilson is the greatest child actor of all time. Her resume speaks for itself. And Matilda's no fucking different, dude. It's just like, and it's one of those where I don't know if it's because it's a nostalgia thing. It's got that sort of that hue that all of our favorite 90s movies have. Kind of not foggy, but like, yeah, like it's just, it looks dreamy. Yeah. And it looks very specific. And I don't know if that's a nostalgia thing or what, but that's a very comforting tone of movie to like turn on. And Matilda is fucking one of the best of them. Yeah. It rules. It's Matilda.
Yeah. I mean, again, like I feel like Lacey put it really perfectly, but I think this movie just is complete magic to me. I think like it's such an escape because, you know, like you said, this child is dealing with all these like hardships in life, having to grow up very early and, you know, get things done on her own. But the way that it's handled, it doesn't feel heavy ever, you know, even in the like scary parts with the chokey and, you know, the angles of like her being really small up against like these adults, it still feels like, to use your word, it feels very whimsical, you know. And I think that's a part of the magic, is like this fairy tale dreamy like movie incomplete, and for her to get a happy ending, and it really be a happy ending, you know, like an actual happy ending, not a storybook ending. Yeah, it's fucking Matilda. It's amazing.
I agree. I can't objectively look at it anymore because it's just a movie that is in your head. I think the good guys and the bad guys are both outlandishly cartoony, but intentionally so, because Matilda's kind of the true north of the movie, and she's the most human person in the movie, and it's purposely so because she's us. And when you're little, your heroes look like superheroes and your villains look like fucking cartoons. Yeah. But, you know, it's really well cast, and they all kind of do the heavy lifting with that, with those characters. And it's just really warm, and it's great.
Look at you, Launch Money Mo.
Thanks for letting me talk about it again.
Okay. Let us go from an elementary school to the kitchens of Paris.
Hell yeah.
This comes from a listener by the name of John.
What up, John?
What it do, John? And he requested that we talk about our active duty.
Let's go.
Team 4, roasted items. Team 5, grill. Team 6, sausage. Get to your stations. Let's go, go, go. Those handling food will walk on two legs.
We need someone to wait tables.
Thumbs in the sky, dude. Thumbs way up.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. I think it's my favorite Pixar film.
Mel?
Let me
explain. Whoa!
I knew it.
What?
No way!
That's not a thumbs down. It's a let me
explain. It doesn't matter.
Y'all do it. No, 2007, Pixar, Brad Bird, written and directed. Talk about it.
The mouse is making fettuccine and this is all that it is. It is just on my lower ranking of Pixar films. And that is just out of sheer, if you were like, what do you want to watch? We're going to lay out all the Pixar films. I'm not going to reach for it.
Name three that are better.
That is so funny. No, let me Let me cut in really quick because, Mel, I felt the same. Ratatouille was never a Pixar movie that I reached for in the last 10 years, whatever, until this watch. And then with this watch, I was like, how have I not watched this movie more? This movie is a fucking masterpiece classic. It is now going to be on a heavy rotation.
Okay.
The thing is,
yeah, I don't know.
You're letting the capital T them get to you, Mel. The only reason you think that is because they're not pushing Ratatouille. You see Toy Story everywhere. True. You see Wall-E more. I don't know why. Ooh. I said it.
He said Wall-E.
Wall-E.
Like, I see, like. Ratatouille and Wall-E are the same for me.
Where's the Ratatouille restaurant at Disneyland? Where's the Ratatouille interactive cooking experience? Like, what are we doing here, man?
In Florida.
Is it? Shit.
They have, yeah, but not here.
Yeah.
They have that cute little, the little Remy that sits on your shoulder with the magnet. That's cute as hell. That you can walk around.
Yeah, dude.
So cute.
Remy.
Yeah, there's literally nothing wrong with this movie. I have like no critiques. I think it's fun.
Then
I
give it a thumbs up!
I wish I had a fucking, not a rat. I wish I had like a small, maybe squirrel.
No.
That was controlling my every move.
It's gotta be a rat.
Chipmunk from Enchanted.
Yeah.
No, it's gotta be a rat. Rats get a bad rap.
It can only be Remy. I wouldn't want another rat on my head.
Remy is so well animated. Obviously, I love Patton Oswalt and his voice, but like, Remy's the perfect amount of like expressive and cartoony, but also there's a level of realism with the food involved and the cooking that like, not, you know, not super realistic. Obviously, it's Pixar, but like, you can tell people that know cooking or learned about cooking were in charge of this and animating this, and like, just it's. Great. It's great, dude. Ratatouille's the best.
Rashawn, you love Ratatouille, huh?
Bitch, I.
You better be so inspired that you making some fucking Italian tonight.
Dude. Okay.
I gotta go to work.
I'll call off.
You better open a box of craft, though. I love this movie so much. Real Remy's been there since the beginning. What's up? It's so good. It's so loving. And the concept is out there a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's told with like such wholehearted conviction. I love it so much. The score is just sublime, is the best word. Watch this with the taste of things. Double feature. I love double features. It's so good. The menu found dead in a ditch. Sorry, I'm not
okay. Oh my God, Rashawn.
The menu could never be ratatouille.
Okay,
You're not trying to be ratatouille.
Keep your fucking cheeseburger.
Anya should have been Remy, bitch.
Hey, Anya could have been Patton Oswalt. I would have been thrilled.
Yeah, honestly. Ooh.
No.
I bet he would have bitten to that motherfucking cheeseburger. Because she sure did
she,
it.
She said.
She said.
No, she didn't. That's a Squidward bite. She fully gave the...
The fake, yeah.
Like, y'all can't, I don't know, make her a... What... I like the menu. Stop. We're not talking about the menu. We're talking about Ratatouille.
Yes.
I wonder if they... I was talking to Lacey about this. Do you think they ever considered having Remy and Linguini be able to talk to each other? And they were like, no, it's way more... Because like it's such a good choice for Remy to not actually be speaking. Like, obviously, he has an inner voice and he can quote-unquote talk. But it's such a smart thematic plan to have him not be able to speak at all.
I would be sad. Like, if that was really me. Like, damn, I want to talk.
I mean, like, the great concept of pulling his hair is just...
Yeah.
Because, like, even if he could pull his hair and be like, no, that to me, whatever, talking. But, like, the scene, it's, like, my favorite scene is when, you know, Lacey and I...
The fun and games part of the...
When Remy's first trying, when Linguini's trying to remake the soup and Remy has to, like, keep biting his hand whenever he's reaching for the wrong ingredient. Come on, dude. It's so good.
I also love, yeah,
period.
I love the animation too. When Remy is coming up with an idea or a recipe, I love that like dreamscape that we get to go in with him. Pixar is notorious for taking something we are familiar with and giving it a new identity, giving it a new personality, giving it a new story. And I think that's what makes Ratatouille so special is, I mean, Josh said rats get a bad rap, and it is true. Like,
they're gross.
You can't think
no,
of
they're any, not.
Anything more diametrically opposed than a street rat and a high cuisine restaurant. Mm-hmm. Like, that is crazy to try and put those two things together. And it's just done with so much tenderness and so much humanity. I mean, we haven't even talked about Ego and the scene at the end with the Ratatouille. And, like, I mean, that is Pixar at its greatest. It's so sweet. It's so sad. Yeah, it's the best. Like I said, it was not a Pixar I reached for. And it is, after this viewing, I'm like, I think that's a top three Pixar for me.
Taylor, I'm so sorry. I forgot the name again already. Is it Twinkles? I don't remember. Friend of the pod, Taylor, had a pet rat for like 4 years. It ruled. It was the classroom rat, and he just kept it after the year. It lived like three times longer than it was supposed to live. Shouts out to Taylor's rat.
That's 3.5 thumbs up. For Ratatouille. Okay, this next movie comes to us from Diego Morales. He gifted us the 1989 science fiction thriller, Tetsuo the Iron Man.
Read the description.
I don't know if I can. I honestly don't know. It centers around a young man who...
No, read the description, Rashan.
You want me to do it? I got it in front of me.
Of what?
I got it in front of me. A metal fetishist driven mad by the maggots wriggling in the wound he's made to embed metal into his flesh, runs out into the night and is accidentally run down by a Japanese businessman and his girlfriend.
Now you can give your review or your summary, Rashan.
Oh, there's more.
Sure.
The pair
Yeah, that's just like the first 10 minutes.
The pair dispose of a
written and directed by Shinya Tsukamoto.
The pair dispose of the corpse in hopes of quietly moving on with their lives. However, the businessman soon finds that he is now plagued by a vicious curse that transforms his flesh into iron.
Thumbs way up.
But of course.
Diego, my guy. Thanks for that one.
Whew.
What a trip.
Josh?
Haven't seen it.
Lacey, tell your experience.
In my Letterboxd review, I have never DNF'd a movie so fast in my life. I made it about 3 minutes into this, and no, Diego, no.
Well, that's the maggots part. That's hard to get through.
You don't even. What did you say to me?
I said, turn back now while you can.
You said, I'm going to be a friend and tell you to turn it off.
And boy, did she ever.
And boy, did I take your advice.
Well, you would have had a bad time.
So for those that synopsis sounds appealing to, Rashawn, why don't you go ahead? We'll be in the audience. Come get us when you need us.
So I'm flying solo on this one.
I'm sorry, Diego, but whew.
Full disclosure, I had a procedure done about a month ago. Part of the recovery was the most insane migraines I have ever had in my entire life. It was a rough recovery. I've never thought that I would see a film that perfectly encapsulated how that felt until I watched this movie. It is a 70-minute migraine on steroids. And I don't mean that in a negative context.
A 70-minute
It's insane. I think they made it on like $100,000, and it feels experimental and avant-garde in like the best kind of way. It feels like something that a certain era of MTV music videos maybe tried to emulate, but it's so insane. I'm not even gonna sit here and pretend that I understood every minute of it, because I fucking didn't. I didn't. But what I did latch onto was the artistic choices that were made throughout the movie. There's some insane imagery in this movie. There's sodomy with the metal penis. There is more body mutilation than I've ever seen. But I do think it is about the way that, if I had to interpret it, the way that we are so separate in our lives and the way that we collide for just a moment, and those certain interactions that stay with us forever with people that you have no idea what they're going through in their personal lives. And then this one interaction changes you forever, and you are left to deal with your own personal demons on your own. Is that correct? I don't fucking know. Did I enjoy watching it? I really, really did, because I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. And I don't think movies like this are made all the time. And clearly this man has a vision, and he was able to execute that. And I'm the big swing guy on the pod, and I love a big swing. And this is a big swinging metal penis. And it's...
Wait, now I want to watch.
Hey.
Yeah, it's, I can't wrap my head around it. I don't know what it is that I watch, but I do know that I enjoyed it. And I think those are sometimes the best movies, and they can kind of inform how you watch movies going forward, what you seek out, what you make, and it was wild. It was fucking wild. But I did tell Lacey not to watch.
I think that's right. I'm grateful. And Diego, I am sorry that I can't give you a full review of the movie, and I have never liked gore. I've never liked it. It's not for me. within 30 seconds, this dude is carving into his leg with a piece of metal, and I just wanted to throw up. I'm so sorry.
I think, like, what we should do after the pod, we'll do a spinoff of just, like, live stream watching Lacey watch these movies.
Absolutely.
No. No.
Yeah. I don't know. Let us know what you think.
Let us know. Let us know in the comments.
I hate you all so much.
I think more than anything, more than my long rambling half-assed dissertations, I think it speaks to the power of getting a camera, grabbing some money, and making your shit. This is equivalent to what Raimi did with Evil Dead. He had a budget and a dream, and he went to his cabin in the woods, and he made a classic. And I love shit like that. I love it. Absolutely.
Cool. Well.
For a change of pace, Evan Berry, another great listener, requested the movie Sing Street. This is a 2016 musical coming-of-age drama written and directed by John Carney. It is about a boy that starts a band because he wants to impress a girl. That's a very bare-bones plot, but things kind of branch out from there. But I'm a huge thumbs up.
Big ol' thumbs up.
Two thumbs way, way up.
Thumbs up.
Let's go.
Yay, Evan.
A lovely picture.
I'll go quick. It's just delightful. Is it the same writer as Once? I know he helped with some of the lyrics. Is it the same?
Yeah, Once, Begin Again.
Yeah. It's same vein, just, you know, yeah. More coming of age than romance. With music from Duran Duran, Aha, Hall & Oates. And you can tell the music is catchy as fuck in this.
Really good.
The music is so good.
Yeah.
There's something I read about the ending that I want to talk about, but we'll get to that after everyone's reactions.
I didn't know what to expect with this at all. I had never seen it before. I'm so grateful you recommended this, Evan, because this like became an instant classic movie to me. I think it is a great coming of age film. I think it's a great sibling film. I was just so touched by it. Like, I feel like I'm still kind of glowing. It was so heartwarming. It was so earnest. And like Mila said, the music is just so good. Like, I would listen to these songs on my own outside of the movie. I think it's brilliantly performed. Yeah, I loved every minute of it.
I loved it. I dug it. I had heard about this movie anytime someone would talk about it, like, you gotta see it. It's so good. It's just like, it's just a feel good movie. And it is exactly that. If we're doing pairings, Oliver Sean, I would watch this with Billy Elliot. I think that's like a very kind of similar coming of age. He has dance. He has music. It reminded me of that a lot. And I fucking love Billy Elliot too. So I also love a movie with good child actors. Not that these are like little kids, but they're like high schoolers. And I think everyone fucking nails it. Yeah, I just thought it is a classic. And all these kids look that age. You know, mm-hmm. I'm over here age police, but they actually look like, you know, you have the little redheaded kid where it's like, okay, you know, he's 15, but he hasn't like reached puberty yet, so he doesn't like look as grown as the other kids, and that, like, everybody, it's just that mismatch of that age where not everyone looks like grown-ups, like here in America where a 15-year-old would be played by like a 20-year-old, you know.
I loved it. This is the one movie I actually didn't get a chance to rewatch, but my pairing would be School of Rock and That Thing You Do.
School of Rock mentioned. Let's go.
This feels like the inverse of if you got to follow all the kids home and see kind of their inner life. I think it's so, so, so sweet. The music's not my favorite, but that's okay because it's still like joyful and really uplifting. And I really like that. Yeah, it's super sweet.
One of my favorite lines and moments, it's between Connor and Eamon. When Connor goes to his house the first or the second time, is like, hey, you want to help me write a song? And Eamon just replies, always. It's just like the most, earnest is like all I can think of. Like, and it's brotherhood in like the actual sibling relationship, but it's also brotherhood within the band. You know, when they play the final song at the gig and he turns around and he's like, you ready? This is going to be the last gig we ever play. Because, they all know that they're going to get in trouble. They're going to get suspended. They're going to get expelled. They're going to, you know, whatever. And they all do it anyways. It's just such a feel, even with all of the serious subject matter that comes in it. I mean, the depression and the guilt and the regret from Connor's brother, the toxic relationship between their parents, the abuse from the pastor at the school.
Fuck that guy, dude.
I mean, all of it was bad, but the sink scene, like, really
insane,
broke my heart. Like, all of these horrible things are happening around them, but it's still such a heartwarming and uplifting story. I just loved it.
Read a thing. The ending, the director intentionally made it a little vague because there's the Drive It Like You Stole It music video dream sequence. The director wanted this to also seem like it could pop, the ending could be another, he shot it to intentionally look and feel like a music video, so there's the possibility that it's a dream sequence, and he intentionally left it vague. Do you guys think the ending actually happened, or do you think it's all
like that they left on a boat
flashing and they're smiling and like they're waving to the boat? Like, when watching it, it's something I never really thought of. And then I read that and I was like, oh, well, maybe. It never crossed my mind while watching it, I guess.
It seems kind of impossible.
Like, oh, yeah. Them
crossing the sea in that fucking little speedboat.
I mean, the channel between Ireland and Great Britain isn't like massive, but that's like still so dangerous.
It's like so dangerous, and it just doesn't seem like the right boat. In short, you know, like you ain't got the right equipment. But I don't know. I'm such a sucker that I'm just like, right. Yeah, it happened.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Fuck it.
I mean, the John Carney says that they made it.
Oh, does he? Okay.
He does. Oh, what a relief.
I cannot believe this didn't get any original song nominations, though.
That's crazy.
Like, it was La La Land dominant.
Yeah. And so I can't believe that this didn't get any.
This film seems so, I mean, I know it's supposed to be set in the 80s, but it feels so much older than that.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy to think that this was at the same time as La La Land. It just feels like something that was like made in the 90s to look like it was in the 80s.
Kind of like the holdovers.
Right.
Y'all better be glad I didn't know about this when it came out, because if I had known about this when it came out, and then it got snubbed for La La Land's two songs,
you would have never.
Mm-mm. Insufferable.
I would have been. Yeah. In have been. Like, whatever you thought Rashawn was when J-Lo didn't get nominated for that one movie.
Not that one. That movie. One movie.
Anaconda, Josh.
Kiss my
Anaconda.
Ass.
Come on.
Kiss my you, whole how ass. How could you forget?
Sorry, for This Is Me Now, I would have been twice as bad.
But I mean, well, City of Stars is a great song. Audition, sure. But City of Stars is great.
Yeah, that deserves it. But like, I don't know. Either Audition. Drive It Like You Stole It or the last one, Go Now.
Yeah, Drive It Like You Stole It should have been.
I like the second song he makes. I don't know the title. But it's the song that Lacey's talking about where he goes into his friend's house and they're like, let's make a song. Mm. And it's kind of slow. I think that's a cute song. Four for four.
Yeah.
Congrats, Evan. And thank you for putting this movie on my radar.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen it earlier.
I think that's it, right, guys?
Yeah, there's nothing else. There's literally no other movie we've ever been asked to do.
We have covered every movie that anyone has ever asked us to talk about on the podcast.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we can close this out confidently knowing that everyone is satisfied.
Yes. Or we could have a little Christmas in springtime.
Oh.
Our longest and most persistent listener requests that we've had since the inception of When Cinephiles Attack.
Baby.
Let's watch Home Alone.
This one's for you, Landon.
Everyone in this family hates me.
Then maybe you should ask Santa for a new family.
I don't want a new family. I don't want any family. Families suck.
Just stay up there. I don't want to see you again for the rest of the night.
I don't want to see you again for the rest of my whole life. And I don't want to see anybody else either.
I hope you don't mean that. You'd feel pretty sad if you woke up tomorrow morning and you didn't have a family.
No, I wouldn't.
Then say it again. Maybe it'll happen.
I hope I never see any jerks again.
Home Alone is a small little movie. Starring
I would call it an indie, even.
Yeah.
Yeah. Made on a shoestring budget. Directed by Chris Columbus. Written by the amazing John Hughes. It's about a boy who has to defend his Chicago home from a pair of robbers after he is accidentally left behind on Christmas. Ooh, the suspense, Linda. Thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up.
I've never seen it. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
You know why we've never talked about this movie, Linda?
Because there's nothing to fight about.
Who has something bad to say about Home Alone?
Literally, not even among us. That's a general question. Who?
Like, if you are saying something bad about Home Alone, it's because you're trying to ruffle feathers at this point.
You just don't like fun.
Yeah, it's a classic. I feel like it paves the way for other comedies like this, right? Like the Christmas Chase with the Christmas music behind it. Like, there's so many other movies now that have it. It's just like the Home Alone thing. We've talked about other movies and it's like, yeah, we have the Home Alone Chase and we're not even talking about Home Alone.
Or like he does like Home Alone traps or like Kevin McAllister traps. Kevin McAllister is such a normal name.
Mm-hmm.
That's a movie name. Like, no one in any movie or TV show can ever be named Kevin McAllister again, because that's Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. That's Kevin McAllister. Mm-hmm.
I also think Home Alone kind of reinvented the Christmas movie, because every Christmas movie that I can think of off the top of my head right now before this was a very standard formula of heartwarming, you know, warm, cozy, yada, yada, yada. This one is like a kid gets abandoned and is left home alone by himself in a house and has to defend the home from two grown robbers. It's not, it is warm and cozy, but the premise of it is like, it's kind of scary. It's kind of,
I think it's chaotic. I think that's a good, I didn't even think about that, but that's a good, I think that's a lot of people's first holiday movie experience. That's why it's so dear to a lot of people. Like, it's the first holiday movie I can think of that wasn't, you know, that wasn't a sweet, warm family movie. It was like, oh, this is kind of fun and rebellious. Like, look at this little kid commit war crimes. Like,
yeah, after this, it was the high concept comedy was, or Christmas comedy, like Lacey said, was kid gets left alone. Now we have to be kid wants an action figure or.
Right. Yeah.
For Christmases, we have to go to all of our in-laws' houses, like highest concept. Mm-hmm. So,
my pairing with Home Alone, Home Alone 2, bitch, run it back. Like,
I love Lost in New York.
I do love it. Yeah, and especially because this is like Home Alone kind of obviously stands on its own. And when you have a movie like that, you're like, how do you how do you do a second one? How do you do a part two? Well, you kind of just do it again in another location, and we're going to be here for it, you know, because we want to see the robbers again. We want to see Macaulay again. We want to see all the same people because we love them the first time, and we'll just jump into the hijinks one more again.
It's a perfect example of a kind of movie that works great as a sequel and not anymore. Because, like, two, great, we're in New York.
We're not going to disparage three on this podcast. We're not doing that.
It gets a little.
I love three.
It gets a little much like, okay, now what? Like, with the second one, it's like, ooh, more traps. Okay. By three, and especially after, okay, what else is there?
No, I love three. Y'all are crazy. Three, I wore that VHS.
What? Okay, real quick. Home Alone 3, that little kid is related how?
He's not.
Okay.
Is he just a one-off?
It's Scarlett Jo and him.
And Scarlett is his older sister. Alex D. Linz.
Yeah.
Scarlett's barely in it, but she's very young.
It's just four
robbers. Yeah.
Yeah,
they don't forget him. He stays home because he's sick.
I thought you were going to say they don't forget him. They purposefully leave him home, and they call the robbers. Yeah, back to Home Alone 1. I can't even think of a critique that, like, okay, ooh, the traps should kill the robbers. Like, yeah, of course they should. Who fucking cares? Yeah. I want to see Joe Pesci slip on some marbles. What are we talking about? It's
awesome. Right. Like, I want to see that iron scar. Like, come on.
It's great. It's a classic. So, respectfully, Lyndon, this is why you didn't get a full episode. Because it's fucking great, and we live for the drama. And there's no drama. Yeah. Everyone just loves Home Alone.
Right.
You know what? Fuck it. Who wants to play a game?
Really? Oh, shit.
I want to play a game.
All right, everyone. Gird your loins.
Riddle me this.
It don't matter if you win by an inch or a mile.
It's a guessing game.
Come on, I'm bored. I'm bored. Play with me.
Riddle me that.
It's quick. This game is called Gift Receipts. I will be giving you clues to famous movie gifts. The first clue worth 3 points is where or how it was purchased and or given. The second clue worth 2 points is one very important rule or piece of advice that was given with the gift. And number three will be the name of the movie worth 1 point.
Okay.
Got it.
Cool.
Yes. These are not the movies like in the episode, right? Just general.
No.
Okay.
The first gift was bought in a back alley behind a supermarket store for a child's birthday.
Oh, okay.
Supermarket or superstore, Target-like.
Yeah. I got nothing.
I can, like, see the scene, but I don't know what.
I know, same.
Kind of fell off the truck and bought at a discount.
Fuck. Okay.
I think you might have been the only person to see this. But everybody knows this gift.
Okay.
But I think only Carmela has seen it. The piece of advice for 2 points that was given is make sure you put the batteries in the back.
Oh, me.
Yes.
What a buzzer.
Is it Child's Play?
That is the movie. What's the gift?
Oh, it's a Good Guy doll.
That's correct.
Good job.
Mello with 2 points. This next gift was bought in a small curio shop in Chinatown on Christmas Eve.
A small what?
Curio
shop? Like curiosities.
Like nicks and necks and little paddywhacks.
Mm. Little tchotchkes.
In Chinatown, you said, on Christmas Eve? Yes. Is it fucking Gremlins?
That is the name of the movie.
Is it Gizmo?
That is correct.
Let's go, dude! Damn!
I don't know why. I have maybe not seen that movie ever, maybe once, but for whatever reason.
It's because it's Rashawn. You have to, like, also think.
Yeah. Gotta get Rashawn's head.
You gotta get in that brain.
I love that. One of the best Christmas movies ever. This next gift was given after a long tour of the facilities where many recipes and secrets were revealed. Josh.
Is it a cheeseburger?
I'm fucking dead.
No.
So it's not the menu, y'all.
It is not the menu.
A lot of recipes. No idea.
For 3 points. For 2 points, the advice given with this gift was be honest, trustworthy, and responsible.
It's given.
I really feel like I should know this.
Yeah. I'm gonna be a little upset. I don't know how much you love this movie, but adjacent. For 1 point, Willy Wonka. Lazy.
The Chocolate Factory?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. I was thinking too hard. I was like
the gum? Was it
Everlasting Gum?
The last gift of the movie is the Chocolate Factory itself. Yes. Anyone's game? Last question. This gift was given as a weapon passed down from his iconic father. Yes, Josh.
That's a lightsaber.
Josh takes the win.
Woo!
Nice.
Ow. That is Anakin's lightsaber given to Luke.
This is fed up.
Josh is the winner of gift receipts.
Hey. That means y'all gotta give me a gift.
Okay.
Punch him in the face.
Here's a little
give you one of these.
Knuckle sandwich. Thank you to all of our amazing listeners, but in particular, thank you to Jack is Back, Jordan Buma, Ryan Berry, Diego Morales, Lunch Money Mo, Evan Berry, and Lyndon LeBeau.
Thanks, y'all.
We appreciate y'all. We
appreciate you guys so much.
This episode is for you.
The request line is officially closed.
The request line for WCA is done.
You could still, like, recommend stuff to us as, like, personally.
People, yeah.
Yeah. Especially Rashawn. He'll watch fucking anything.
Anything.
Okay. That's it. That's it for this Listener's Choice mega episode. As always, we thank you so much for being here with us as we wind the show down. Please feel free to still find us on social media at Cinephile Attack on Instagram and Twitter. Email us at wincinephilesattack@gmail.com if you want to chat. Yell, scream that we're ending the show because I feel you. But from Rashawn,
Mella,
Josh,
and Lacey.
Thank you so much, and we will see you next week.